you end up in jail simply because of your activism, and at the end, you would also been convicted.
Cambodia targets political opponents. It's Monday, November 30th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia makes virus progress, the physical effects of coronavirus, Africans push back on Chinese textiles, a sports legend remembered, virtual visits with Santa. It's all on today's VOA Asia. For more than a year, the Cambodian government has been rounding up supporters of the banned Cambodian National Rescue Party and charging them with treason. Amid tight security and chaotic scenes, 129 of them appeared last week before the Phnom Penh Municipal Court, although their trials have now been put off until early next year. Luke Hunt reports from the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh.
The trial follows a failed bid by Cambodian National Rescue Party leader in exile, Sam Rainsy, to enter Cambodia last November and lead a popular uprising across the country, promising to arrest Prime Minister Hun Sen and end this country's one-party rule. Among those charged with treason is Thierry Seng, a prominent political activist who spoke with VOA shortly before the proceedings got underway.
Hun Sen and his cronies are afraid of Sam Rainsy returning to continue to do politics in Cambodia. So the first attempt, which saw a lot of international support, occurred in November 2019. I was involved with the Nine Finger campaign, and as you may remember, Hun Sen threatened anyone who showed the Nine Finger with cutting them off, and so it only made me want to advocate the return some more, which I did at every instance.
The Nine Finger gesture represents November 9, Independence Day here, and the day Sam Rainsy promised to return from France. It became a popular salute among his supporters. Now, many of them could face jail terms of up to 12 years. Sapeep Chak, the executive director of the Cambodian Centre for Human Rights, says Cambodian laws are being used to silence critics.
The problem, you know, like you end up in jail simply because of your activism, and at the end, you would also been convicted at certain point with a suspended sentence. That is a common scenario we have seen, and that is somehow a kind of expected fate for any activist in Cambodia.
The CNRP came close to winning the popular vote in elections in 2013. Sam Rainsy refused to accept the result, and widespread protests followed. His party was subsequently banned, and Hun Sen's Cambodian People's Party won every seat contested at polls in 2018. Since then, protests have been rare, but union leaders, journalists, NGO staffers, and even people protesting land grabs are also before the courts. Atit Kong, vice president of the Coalition of Cambodian Apparel Workers' Democratic Union, urged the government to reconsider its attitude to critics.
The government should consider and also provide more free space for the people to exercise their rights.
Thierry Seng, who is also a US-trained lawyer, says rounding up civil society leaders had made it easier for the government to arrest remaining CNRP supporters.
I think they're charging me now because there are no civil society leaders or union leaders who could help mobilize, because these leaders are either detained or the exiled. And we, as you know, we have no opposition party, we have no opposition leader, we have very limited free press. So it's opportunistic in their charge of me at this moment in time. The charges are serious.
Due to the sheer numbers and chaotic scenes at the court, the judges have divided the 129 into two separate trials, which will be heard in January and March next year. Meanwhile, just last month, Sam Rainsy said he would make another attempt at returning to Cambodia, but would not say how or when. That won't sit well with the government and should raise further concerns among those who support him. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
You'll find much more in our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia, and you can always make a visit to the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Afghan army base bombing kills dozens. Indonesian police seek Islamic State-linked suspects in deadly attack. Australians warned of floods, storms as summer approaches. India enters recession, worst among major economies. Indian farmers protest deregulation legislation. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more at Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our website. That's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It was a festive atmosphere as Oscar-winning American singer-actor Cher traveled to Pakistan to mark the newfound freedom of a 35-year-old elephant, whom she campaigned to move out of abusive captivity in a Pakistani zoo. Thanks to Cher and Austria-based animal rights group Four Paws International, the elephant named Kavan was flown out of Pakistan aboard a special cargo plane to a wildlife sanctuary in Cambodia. Dr. Amir Khalil is with Four Paws International.
The elephant currently is physically able to fly to Cambodia, but on the other hand, still a lot of medical attention needed for the elephant. Still problem with stereotype behavior. She reduced his food also, his diet. Now he lost weight. Before he was overweight, and still there is a huge air cracks in his nails. Everything is ready. I hope by 29 noon time, Kavan will be forever retired to work at the zoo and to be back to be an elephant again.
Animal rights activists and musicians gathered at the Islamabad Zoo to bid farewell to Kavan, dubbed as the world's loneliest elephant. He was 1 year old when he was gifted to Pakistan by Sri Lanka 35 years ago. Kavan had been held for years in chains in an insufficient enclosure and was forced to perform in front of visitors in the poorly managed zoo. Kavan's troubles drew the attention of iconic American singer-actress Cher, who launched a campaign in 2016 and succeeded in securing freedom for the elephant from captivity. Hope is rising in the Australian state of Victoria, which has recorded no new coronavirus cases or deaths for 28 consecutive days. Health authorities say they have achieved what is widely considered to be the official benchmark for eliminating COVID-19 from the community. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
The last coronavirus patient in Victoria was discharged from a hospital Monday. There have been no reported cases or fatalities in Australia's second most populous state for a month. Infections, though, have been detected in other parts of the country. There are concerns the virus could escape into the community from quarantine hotels for citizens returning from overseas. They face a mandatory 14 days in guarded isolation on their return home. But breaches in security were blamed for a deadly second wave of infections in Victoria. But the Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says Australia's success in containing COVID-19 has been widely praised.
The outside world is not a safe place. We see that the outside world beyond Australia's borders has enormous numbers of cases. And so we will, as a world, have to manage COVID-19 at least through 2021 and potentially beyond. And that has implications for Australia. At the same time, Australia has done incredibly well. We've still had heartache. We've still had tragedy. But the world looks at Australia and overwhelmingly says, we wish we were Australia.
Authorities say there have been four critical parts to Australia's coronavirus battle plan: closing its borders to foreign travellers back in March, mass testing, sophisticated contact tracing, and strict lockdowns. There have also been high levels of compliance by Australians to social distancing and hygiene protocols. A second wave of infections prompted state authorities in Victoria to bring in some of the world's toughest lockdown restrictions in July, which have been relaxed in recent weeks. Australia has recorded almost 28,000 coronavirus cases and 907 deaths since the pandemic began, according to Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Centre. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In just a moment on VOA Asia, figuring out the long-term physical effects of coronavirus. This news from VOA Asia. South Korean intelligence experts say they have foiled North Korean attempts to hack into South Korean companies developing coronavirus vaccines. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're starting out the week together on VOA Asia. Glad to have you with us. Being intubated and laying on a bed for weeks without properly moving, eating, or speaking has left many people scarred. More with VOA's Mariama Diallo on some of the lasting effects from the coronavirus, including fatigue, shortness of breath, muscle pain, headaches, poor balance, and memory loss.
Many people who had serious cases of COVID-19 are dealing with its long-term effects months after leaving the hospital. In Barcelona, 56-year-old Pablo Aguilar is one of them. He spent 3 months at the hospital, 1 month in the ICU. It's been 5 months since he left the hospital.
The truth is, I am surprised because I thought that at this point I would be walking better. The long-term effects that have remained, they are tremendous. I get tired. I have become afraid of going out in the street alone. I have a small dog. Taking the dog out, I considered a big responsibility. I don't care.
Aguilar is part of a group of COVID-19 survivors participating in a rehabilitation program in a Barcelona public hospital. Activities include exercises to strengthen muscle, improve balance, and aerobic capacity. Another participant, Eulalia Canella, a mother of two and a 49-year-old nurse, got infected while taking care of virus patients. She was never hospitalized but suffered from pneumonia and was bedridden at home for a month. In the summer, she thought she was getting better but noticed new symptoms popping up: hair loss, numbness in the hands, and muscle pain. Not a day goes by without a headache, she says. Recently, doctors discovered her lungs weren't working properly, hence affecting her kidneys.
Your active time reduces itself to 3 or 4 hours a day. The rest of the time you must be on the sofa stretched out or resting. Dinner time comes and you must tell your kids, make yourself whatever you can, because mother cannot get up from the sofa.
Dr. Esther Marco oversees the rehabilitation programs Canella is part of. She also had COVID-19 in the spring, but unlike her patients, recovered quickly and is now back at work.
We have two big groups of patients who are untrained from being in the ICU, for example, who get tired and have muscular pain and can feel like they're running out of breath even when they're resting. And then you have another profile of patients who have difficulty swallowing or difficulty speaking.
Marco estimates some 15 to 20% of COVID-19 patients who were hospitalized will end up needing serious rehabilitation. Spain has the sixth highest number of coronavirus cases in the world, with more than 1.5 million people infected since the beginning of the pandemic. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand has signed a purchase agreement for AstraZeneca's potential COVID-19 vaccine in the country's first coronavirus vaccine procurement deal. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Nigeria has been producing traditional handmade textile designs for centuries. But preservers of the ancient art say modern manufacturing and cheap Chinese imports are threatening their extinction. Ifo Katang reports from Kano, Nigeria.
Kano's Kofermata Dye Pit is one of the last surviving hand-coloring textile makers in Nigeria. For the last 70 years, Mahmoud Abubakar has been using only natural dyes to produce traditional fabric. He worries about the future of the trade, though.
This place has been around for more than 500 years. Arabs, whites, and people from all over Africa come here because this business is not a small one. We expect that the youth should desire to be part of it so that when we are gone, they will replace us.
However, designers say cheap Chinese manufacturing means it doesn't make good business sense to produce textile locally. Kano's Canteen Quarry Textile Market is the largest in Nigeria.
The progress we have made in this business is that we now have our own graphic designer who draws the designs and sends them to China for them to produce the textiles and send back to us.
The Nigerian Textile Manufacturers Association blames the decline in locally made fabric on the Chinese imports, which they claim are often smuggled.
They're all findable, the counterfeit products that washes away in 3 days. And they look, they take our design, go to China and bring it and sell it cheaper. 5 years like this, they will sell it at 1,000 naira, while our factories cannot produce these products at less than 3,000. Because these smugglers have no no workers, they don't pay taxes, they don't add any value. So they can afford to sell cheaper.
In Nigeria.
Nigeria's central bank in October said it provided cotton producers with more than $300 million in loans in recent years to support the domestic textile industry, once Africa's largest. In 2017, Nigeria's president ordered that uniforms and footwear made in Nigeria be given priority over imports and government's buying. However, Nigeria's Union of Textile and Garment Workers say the policy needs to be expanded.
What I was saying, I'm making references to South Africa. South Africa had a policy on textile, and it simply said, buy South Africa, wear South Africa. And they have a tax force that enforces that. So it's government. Government must be seen to provide enabling ground for business.
Craftsman Abubakar says the government should buy their handmade fabrics and export them to the world if they want these traditional Nigerian textiles to survive. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Kano, Nigeria.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, football fans around the world continue to mourn the sudden death last week of Diego Maradona, one of the sport's greatest players. The massive television tower in Tianjin, China, was lit up with the image of Maradona following his death Wednesday, as were other structures and buildings around the world. In his home country of Argentina, fans gathered to pay tribute to Maradona, who died at age 60 of a heart attack. Edgar Maciel reports.
Thousands of Argentines filed past Diego Maradona's coffin Thursday to pay tribute to the country's football legend, who died of a heart attack Wednesday. The crowd gathered at Casa Rosada, Argentina's presidential palace in Buenos Aires, many in tears, others chanting his name. They came to pay tribute and to say farewell to the former World Cup captain and idol of Argentine football. Long lines had already formed in front of Argentina's presidential palace in the early hours of the night Wednesday, as news of Diego Maradona's death that the morning spread through the capital. Everywhere there were emotional and grieving fans, some gathered in Villa Fiorito, Maradona's childhood home.
I'm in pain. I have no words. I never imagined that he would be gone.
I'm devastated. A part of my soul is gone. Everything is gone. The greatest is gone. No, no, no. I still can't believe it.
Famous footballers from around the world also mourned his death. In Brazil, Pelé said he lost a great friend, and the world lost a legend. He wrote on Twitter that one day he expects to play football with Maradona in the sky. On the football field, Maradona was called God by Argentines. He was born poor on the outskirts of Buenos Aires. But football changed his destiny at 9 years old. At Argentinos Juniors, where he started playing, the stadium today bears his name. He was also an idol at Boca Juniors in Napoli, in Italy. Maradona became a legend in 1986, with such spectacular plays and moves that the Mexico World Cup Championship became known as the Maradona Cup. His career included 680 official matches, 350 goals, and one title of the world's best player in 1995. At the end of his career as a player at the age of 37, he was fighting drug addiction and weight problem. In 2010, Maradona coached Argentina's World Cup team and more recently was commanding Gimnasia Esgrima. Time passed and left marks. Between ups and downs, he dodged death countless times. On Wednesday, Maradona finished his last battle. Edgar Maciel for VOA News, São Paulo.
This holiday season, the traditional visit with Santa Claus is going digital. Virtual visits with Santa Claus are being offered as a safer way for children to interact with Santa during the pandemic. VOA's Tina Trin takes a look at Jingle Ring, which specializes in virtual Santa visits.
In a year filled with virtual happy hours and Zoom weddings, visits with Santa Claus are getting their own pandemic twist.
You get to do it from the safety, the comfort of your home. It's personalized.
Walt Gear and Sarah Blackman are the co-founders of Jingle Ring, an online platform that lets families visit virtually with Santa. Blackman says it's more than just a Zoom or Skype call with Saint Nick.
There's pre-session entertainment where you get to meet some of Santa's family characters, and there's a countdown animation that builds excitement.
Services start at $25 for live video sessions that include a photo and recording, and go up to $50 at peak times like Christmas Day. Users can choose from a diverse cast of Santas and Mrs. Clauses with several language, cultural, and faith-based offerings.
Maybe they need American Sign Language or ASL in order for someone in the family to enjoy Claus. Maybe they have a child who has special needs.
The founders say the personalized experience has advantages over traditional in-person visits.
Now Santa magically knows the children's names, how old they are, what they want for Christmas. Maybe one of the parents has given Santa a virtual hint and says, hey, we wouldn't mind making sure that, you know, the child knows we really appreciate them doing their homework this week.
This is the norm that I saw coming. It took me by surprise and got here a little earlier.
Dee Sinclair, who bills himself as the real Black Santa, prefers in-person visits, but admits there are a few perks to going online.
I get to sit in my home studio. I get to relax.
With a variety of virtual backgrounds to choose from, Sinclair says the online format doesn't diminish kids' enthusiasm and delight.
It's just Santa's calling and the excitement jumps in just as much.
This holiday season, there's still moments of wonder and holiday cheer to be had, especially when Santa is just a click away. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
This has been VOA Asia. We're glad to have had you with us today. Continue online with VOA Asia on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring this program to you every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.